up here where the vibes are better. There's lots of space. Lots of space. So I am very curious what's going on in your minds. If there are any questions or topics, questions about the teachings or practice, please, Marissa. I said something to the effect of, if you are not in touch with your body, you're not in touch with reality. Because the reality can only be found in the present moment. Our body is always present. And so if we are living absent-mindedly, we're not so well in touch with our body. And so if we're not in touch with our body, we're living absent-mindedly, we're missing reality. So I think all of that is meant to invite everyone, as the Buddha recommended, to first and foremost direct your awareness, direct your mindful attention to your body. In fact, there is a wonderful little sutra, and if I'm lucky, I have it with me. I feel lucky tonight, but there is no guarantee. Well, essentially, it said if you do one thing, of all the things you could pay attention to, there is one thing that leads to happiness, to a calm abiding, to focus, to the sure heart's release, to the abandonment of the causes of suffering. What is that one thing? It is mindfulness directed to the body. So if you put your mind in your body in your mind, body will become calm. Mind will become calm. When we are calm in our minds, calm in our bodies, we don't want anything. We don't want to be somewhere else. We don't need anything. We lose the evidence that something's wrong, which is what our mind is telling us pretty maniacally and persistently, that there's something wrong with the present moment, something wrong with me, something wrong with my life, and that I won't be happy until I figure it out or get there. And all of that quiets. And interestingly enough, when even if it doesn't quiet, we recognize it. We recognize what our mind is telling us. We start to, instead of believing, just unconsciously believing every little story our mind is telling us about what we need to be happy, we actually know, oh, my mind says that I won't be happy unless I go shopping. I won't be happy until the weekend. I won't be happy until the vacation, or until my partner is different, or until I've screamed at that person who is the cause of my suffering. So we laugh a little bit, but that's the kind of mental illness that floats through our mind that we believe. And that is it. That's what we call, one way of talking about it, that's distorted perception. Because in fact, nothing that can't be found here, now in fact, nothing that cannot be found here now in within this fathom-long body, as the Buddha put it, nothing that cannot be found here can make you happier than you are. That all that search, all that endless search that our mind tells us we have to do for happiness leads mostly to misery, leads to dissatisfaction, leads to a feeling of reality's not okay. Reality, I don't want to be in reality. I want something different. And unfortunately, reality will continually call you back until you find harmony with it, till you can sit right in the middle and meet the winds that blow through your life, the easy ones and the hard ones, and you remain still. And still, or in what I mean by still, is less reactive. Where your heart remains open, your eyes clear. As Derek Walcott says, what we need is here. We don't need new earth or heaven, but to be quiet in our hearts and in eyes clear, what we need is here. So that's a really different message than we are offered every day. It's mostly leave your body, believe your mind, distract yourself any way you can. Get lost in thought. That's the message. You know, anyway, anything but having to actually feel reality. And so often when we start to feel our bodies, they're incredibly restless because we're so used to being disembodied, so used to not flowing with the river of feelings. We're mostly used to tightening around feelings because we're not used to them. And the more we tighten around feelings, the more we start thinking. And the more we start thinking, the less embodied we are. We don't even feel our bodies. We're just mostly, you know, I point here, but the thoughts aren't there. There's no location for them. But the winds tend to move up, though. We tend to be, we not feel that sense of settledness, groundedness. And it's, if you're not in your body, you're not in reality. I just finished leading a retreat at Spirit Rock, and the end of a retreat is such a great example of our common mental habits. Because as soon as the 24 hours before the retreat ends, people start inevitably and naturally start anticipating the end of the retreat. They start anticipating going. They've been in this pristine, precious, healing, safe cocoon, womb of Spirit Rock where I was this time. And their bodies are calm, minds are settled a little bit more. Heart so tender, it's so absolutely sweet to look into people's eyes and to meet with them. And it just gives me confidence every day about our intrinsic nature when we have some measure of safety in our lives. But the mind starts leaping ahead. Of course, it does that at work every day too. Or, whatever we're doing, we tend to be obsessed with what's next. And it's partly from being disembodied. But at the end of a retreat, people can see their mind doing it. So we say, of course your mind is going to project the going home. But the interesting thing is that projection, because of the contrast that people think in their mind is, oh, I'm here and this is wonderful, I'm going home. And then instead of just knowing that going home is the same moment-to-moment attention, that they were cultivating on the retreat. The tendency is to create this monolith of home in our mind with all the most difficult and stressful things that have to be dealt with. And it all gets piled together into this this big life. You know, nobody has a big life. Every single person has one moment at a time. And if you're in your body moment by moment, you see that it's only a moment at a time. So the whole idea of a big life you're going back to is just a story. It's one of those little narratives in our mind. It's how we create in our mind, moment to moment, what the Buddha called Sakkaya Ditti, a view of ourselves, a view of ourselves of having come from the past, moving through the present, where I am now, on my way to the future. But that's never happened to anybody, really. The totality of every person's life has been being right where they are, moment by moment, and the present unfolding. Always right where I am, no matter where I'm going or where I've been, I'm only and always now. Nobody has ever come from somewhere else, going through here on our way to somewhere else. We're always right where we are. Whether I'm zooming down the highway, on my way, or on an airplane crossing the Atlantic Ocean, I'm right where I am. I'm always present. So this whole picture of time and this whole picture that tends to create a lot of stress is completely imaginary. It's maybe natural to imagine our life and all the things that we have, tasks that we have to fulfill. But the moment I do that, and I don't know that I'm thinking, that I don't know that I'm in my body here and now, having a thought about the future. If I don't know that, I will literally be born into that. I'll disappear into that world, that imaginary world, and I will take that world that I've created in my mind to be the reality, that I'm that person. And that version of me that has to make that transition to daily life or that has to get to the end of the week or whatever your version is of projection of time that the Buddha called Sakkaya Ditti. It's a view of myself in time. It's imaginary. And a key component in putting our mind in our body and strengthening that sense of aware presence is that we start to wake up to see that that is a thought of myself and that my immediate and direct experience can't be captured in those thoughts. My immediate experience is I'm here. And if I check another moment, I'm here. So that whole idea of where I've gone and where I'm going, it's a little storyline. And once I wake up to that, I don't, and neither do you, I don't have to believe it. So what I always say at the end of the retreats, and you can kind of alter this to whatever it is that you project onto your life, because most people who take on practice say, I want to integrate this into my life. This is precious to me. I want to integrate it into my life. And maybe even what you experience on Tuesday night, you want to integrate it into your life. But once you start thinking of your life, you think of all the things that you do in your life, and how am I going to integrate this into my life? And all of a sudden your life gets big and you get anxious. How am I going to do that? I have this fledgling little practice. How am I going to enter? And then, how I reframed it, and many of you have heard this with me at the end of retreats, is I said, no, you don't integrate your practice into your life. You integrate your life as it presents itself into your practice, which is right here. You don't have to go anywhere to integrate your practice. You just have to stay here. Stay right here. Bring it on. The next thing, okay, I've learned how to be mindful moment by moment here tonight, Tuesday night, and I'm just going to stay here. I'm going to be mindful as things unfold. As I drive home tonight, I'm going to stay right where I am. The scene is going to change, and I'm going to notice the arising of anger if somebody cuts me off. Oh, isn't that interesting? But I'm going to stay right where I am. And the more I stay where I am, embodied, the more I'm going to have to feel all those habitual, conditioned reactions of greed, of hatred, of all the views that I have about myself. There's no escape. It's the wisdom of no escape. But at least I can start to know my mind instead of being just a slave to it. Because our minds are maniacally building a house of time that is a bit scary and daunting. But moment by moment, life is not as daunting. And I can't take care of the moment that happened before. It's done. And I can't take care of the one that hasn't happened yet. But can all of us take care of this one? While we're on the subject of what's real, what is your experience right now of reality sitting here? If you don't go into one, if you don't consult one of those memorable stories about yourself, and before you project one of those stories onto the imagined future, what is the reality in this present moment? It may not be pleasant, but if you hang out here a little bit, in reality, you'll see that it's not easy to describe, other than I'm here in some way, or I'm open, or I'm enough, or I'm something. But it's without your memory, without the thinking mind's version of reality, it's pretty okay. Check it out. Anybody willing to say what it's like here after your last story has passed and before the next one comes?
Points of sensation.
That's workable. Anyone else?
Calm.
Safety. What's that?
Joyful.
Beautiful. It's so, to me, it goes back to that word, the Tibetan word, emoho. How amazing. It's so amazing that we don't create anything here in pointing to that. We didn't create some kind of special experience. This is what's here and available to us when we're not busy looking somewhere, when we're not preoccupied. We're not using the past to define ourselves or the future projections of the past. Space is here, open and inviting, comfortable. Now, it may be a little unsettling at first not to have a way of defining yourself, not to have the usual suspects of views of whether you're okay or not. I think we get really comfortable being the one who's not okay. There's a kind of morbid pleasure in being miserable. You know, it's true. So it's maybe a little bit of a risk, but you don't have to go anywhere to feel okay. And that's what happened to the Buddha. The Buddha just tried and tried and tried to conquer the mind and become enlightened. And then he sat down and he saw everything my mind tells me. Everything. It's coming and it's going and I can't find, there's no rest in that stream of doubts and desires and fears. Because up until the time of his practice, his mind was maniacally telling him he should fulfill every desire possible. That's what everybody said. And then when he started to practice a bit of renunciation and started to intuit and feel the kind of joy of simplicity, and once he became mentally strong and very strongly embodied, he started to have that sense that the present is pretty compelling and why would I want to be somewhere else? But his mind kept saying, no, it can't be that easy. This is too wonderful. It can't be that easy. You don't deserve it. Who do you think you are? His mind said, no, you better just keep becoming someone. Just keep trying to get somewhere else. You know, keep up with everybody else. Keep up with the Joneses. I always think of Bo Lozoff, who says, we're always all about keeping up with the Joneses, but it's time that we see that the Joneses are not happy. But anyway, kidding. So he sat there and he noticed, oh, these thoughts, they're happening to me. They're not happening to somebody else, but these are not myself. A story of me is not me. They're selfless. They're just these habitual thoughts. And how can we come out of the tangle of our thinking other than to notice them? To not be a slave to them. And how do we not be a slave? We have to notice them. And the only way to notice them is being here and awake. And what a wonderful anchor for being here, but this body. It just, if I'm knowing my body, I'm here. So just one last thing about that. So then I just want to say what happened to him. Once he stopped following the stories, then he followed it. He tried to follow his moods, and they were the same way. Very personal, but very selfless. They were just coming and going. Then the body, oh, it's my body. Even the body he saw was not permanent, not. It was operating according to its own laws. He couldn't tell it to feel good all the time, couldn't tell it to not to get sick and old and die. So he knew that. He felt that. And once he saw that, he said, I'm not going to cling or get identified with, get caught up in my thoughts, my moods, my body. And the moment he stopped clinging, stopped that process of identification, his mind relaxed. And he saw that in a flash of insight that the sense of okayness, the sense of freedom, sense of sufficiency, enoughness, was always already the very nature of his mind. We're already the nature of ourselves. And it's so close, it's easy to miss. So it's really, so there's nothing, no better place to begin than to put your mind in your body. That's how you'll find reality. And the reality is, you're not what you think. You're not who you think you are. As one of my Korean Zen teachers said, who are you? You think you know. You don't know. So what you think is not it. But the people who spoke up, they didn't say when they checked out, when you check out who or what you are on present evidence, not one person said, well, I'm not enough. I should be different. I'll never get enlightened. Everybody else has got it together and I don't. My life doesn't worry. Nobody said that because you don't find that on present evidence. You find presence. And you may find that story floating through your mind, but it's not as sticky when you're present. Anyway, I saw a few other hands go up. So what? Okay, Madison, you were first. Two wonderful teachers at Spirit Rock this weekend.
And on Sunday, I had a perfect day. And on Saturday, I actually had to leave.
Okay, on Sunday, she had a perfect day. On Saturday, she had to leave. We have, at Spirit Rock, there are non-residential programs where people come in and out. And I was up on the hill doing a residential retreat. So, yeah, go ahead. Somebody was eating, and she had a little reaction to it, but then she worked with it.
Went on.
Then the cell phone.
Off and on, off and on, checking emails, whatever. And I was, well, you already know exactly what my reaction was.
You got triggered. You had a strong aversive reaction.
Right. So I had this reaction, and I thought, okay, now I've been here before. I'm going to do something different with this. So I stuck with it, and I felt it. Would you maybe do something with your cell phone? It's really like, I didn't want to go through what I thought about somebody using their cell phone in the middle, in the front rows. And she said very loudly, no, I can do nothing about this. So I sat with that. And then I went to the back and I talked with the coordinator of the day long. And he said, wait for your practice, Madison.
Oh.
You just stick with it. And I sat with that. And then I went over to the instructor at a break time, and I told him what was happening. And he said, why don't you move your seat? And I moved my seat, and I sat with that. That didn't work out too well.
What was happening when you moved your seat?
I couldn't see as well. And oh. I realized that there was a reason why I sit in the front and not in the back. It wasn't working for me.
Yeah.
And I sat with that. And then I came back and the teacher made an announcement. We would like all cell phones to be turned off in the room because it interferes with the sound. And I thought, yes. You know, and I sat with that. And 4 seconds later, she had the cell phone on again. And I sat with that. And then I thought, I have done every single thing that I could do, and I am sitting with all of it. And then suddenly I realized I cannot sit here anymore.
And when you say you were sitting with it, what does that mean exactly?
I was trying to pass the moments of irritation, like a little.
Trying to get past it?
Right.
What about turning toward the pain of the irritation and saying, wow, this hurts so much, I am so contracted. Ouch. This is a moment of suffering. Suffering is part of life. Can I meet this with some kindness? I'm suffering right now. That's what I would want you to do.
Okay. That was sort of my question, because finally I took a deep breath and I thought, oh, it's not working, and I don't like to leave, and I took a deep breath. And
yeah, I think you were hoping it would go, the aversion would go away. And that's just, that has the effect of compounding the aversion. That has the effect of strengthening it. So it really is saying it's opening to what you're experiencing and not knowing whether it will go away or not. But what you would do with someone who has a condition that they can't get away from, you would feel compassion toward them. But we're not so good at self-compassion. 1 second, we have another hand, and then I'll get to you. That's all we can do right now, but please, go ahead.
So how do you suggest simultaneously?
Well, all future plans are made in the present moment. There has been no other time that plans have been made other than at whatever present moment that was that plan was being made. Yeah, you have to think about the future, but a thought of the future is not the future. It's a thought arising in the present moment. So that's all. The present includes everything. Everything that ever was and ever is or ever will be is right here. It's just these places called past and future just do not exist as reality. They only exist as projections in this unfolding present. And that's what we have to discover. Don't believe me. Where is the past now? And where is the future? But yet our mind projects these as though they're real, projects as though we have come from the past on our way here to the future. So the past is back there, right? And then the future's up there. Is that right? Is that true? It's just a story. I've shared this many times on Tuesday night, but there was a culture I studied in graduate school that had their view of the past was the past is ahead of you because you can see it. The future is behind you because you can't see it. So how's that mess with your mind? You realize how much we're living in these kinds of projections as though they're reality. And they're just pictures. So we don't get rid of that, but we recognize, oh, I'm having a thought, I'm planning. There's a need right now that I'm recognizing that I don't have a job. I don't have a job. And in order for me to secure my future and my family's future, I need to do everything right now to plant the seeds so that those future present moments will be ones that are where I have enough food on the table. So all that happens right here. What happens, though, and those thoughts of the present, those thoughts of the future tend to proliferate, and we literally are living in those thoughts, and we've lost touch here. So if I know that I'm thinking about the future and planning, and I'm somewhat attuned to the fact that I'm here doing that, and I'm feeling my body, that whole process is a lot less anxiety-provoking, because I know this is where this is where relief and happiness and freedom are. I have that already if I stay here, if I stay embodied as I plan. And if I know I have it already, then the future, how it turns out, I'm not sure how things will work out, but at least I'll stay present. And I know if I stay present, I can work with the situation, whatever unfolds. But if I'm so worried about the future that I'm so anxious that I can't stay in my body, that's just not a very workable way to go through life in a state of fear and torment. Because it's not possible to know how things will unfold. Anyway, I think I could go on and on about that. Please, the person who had their hand up, last one, you're... Yeah, turning toward emotions instead of away. Could you slow it down a little and make it a little louder? Yes, past traumatic experience lives in the present, in reactivity and fight or flight, and yet the way to accommodate those feelings is a delicate process, and you can't just immediately go right into them. And for the most part, because we tend to, just not to overuse this kind of language, we tend to get re-traumatized unless you have a pretty strong attention and you develop certain skills of being able to slowly accommodate some of those feelings. But the way that we get the practice doing that is feeling the feelings that we're having on a regular basis and building up to the hard stuff. But you can't predict when things will come, but there is a way to even accommodate the feelings that arise that are associated with past trauma. So we actually have to call it is it a comment or a question or? Quick one.
I love the story about the wise chaplain, the wise woman.
You like the wise woman.
what do you think that conversation would sound like after the traveler asked her that question?
He asked, what do you think that conversation would sound like after the traveler asked the question? I don't think it would be in words. I think it would just be the transmission of her state of mind, which was very much about being present. I think the person would intuit that it has something to do about learning to live in the present moment, learn, and just that quality of open-heartedness that transmits heart to heart, mind to mind. I think we're doing it all the time here. We're sharing our love moment by moment. Mark, I can't do it tonight. You can come up and talk with me now. She would tell the traveler he already has it. Yeah. Yeah, that's why. That's a little bit of, he wouldn't say anything. Pointing out. Always already. Thank you. That was the right answer. Let's just sit quietly for 10 seconds. See, notice how we're anxious to get on to the next thing. This is part of our restlessness. So what if we just sit for a few moments and just consider the possibility that you have all the time in the world. In fact, step out of time completely. Past gone, future unborn, even the present is another idea. Just reality. And having some hunch that hanging out a little bit in reality is of some benefit, brings some blessing, some goodness. Let's just share all of those blessings and goodness with all beings that we also touch into when we are quiet. We connect intimately with the world when we are present. The same life that flows through you flows through me. And let's share the blessings of our presence with a deep wish that all beings can know happiness, true happiness, and the cause of happiness. Be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. And all beings can rest in natural great peace. That all beings can grow in serenity. And I wish that our practice every day is dedicated to the welfare and benefit of all. May all beings know reality. Thanks for hanging in there with me, and thank you for your generosity. Thanks for your practice, and hope to see you next Tuesday.
Thank you for your talk. One more comment and question. I was trying so hard. I'm sorry this story is so long. To do it differently. I love that.
That was beautiful.